Hey guys, welcome to the Dear Dreamer podcast. I'm your host, Meg Kilgore, and I'm a digital strategist, publishing coach, and author. And today I have something so exciting planned for you. I'm actually going to interview my amazing husband, Benjamin Kilgore, about his new book, Growing Pains. This is an interview you're definitely going to want to pay attention to because it is incredible. And I am not just saying that because I'm his wife, although I am a little biased. However, before we begin this episode, I do want to warn you, we do talk about some sensitive subjects. So if you have kids listening or if you're at work, now might be a good time to put in those headphones. Anyways, here is my conversation with Ben.
So I thought it'd be fun if we did some would you rather questions.
Oh God. Okay.
I think I know how you're going to answer these, but I could be wrong. I know this one already. Would you rather a phone call or a text?
A text. I hate talking on the phone. I hate it.
Okay, I don't know what you're going to pick for this one. Would you rather lose the ability to speak forever or lose the ability to read forever?
Oh, God. I think I would rather lose the ability
really?
To speak. I think so. So if I lose the ability to speak, at least I can communicate in other ways. If I lose the ability to read, that's just not practical. First of all, for like entertainment, but also like when I go to Whataburger and I can't read the menu, like there's a lot of practicality, or like figuring out what movie I want to watch when, like all that stuff. So I think I'd
choose the same thing.
Yeah.
Would you rather have unlimited international first class plane tickets, like forever, or never have to pay for food at restaurants?
Oh, I think the first class.
First class plane tickets,
I think so. That would be, yeah. Because every weekend I could just go somewhere for free. Like that'd be, yeah. But then if I don't ever have to pay for food, I could afford first class plane tickets.
I knew these were going to confuse you so much.
Yeah, these are. I think I'm going to change my answer to never have to pay for food, ever.
I like that, too, because it works out for me, because unlimited date night. Here's another one. Would you rather travel the world, another travel one, travel the world for an entire year on a shoestring budget?
Okay.
Or you can stay in one country for an entire year, but you are living in luxury.
I'd rather that one.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Quality over quantity.
Do I pick? Yeah. Quality over quantity, no matter what. Do I get to pick the country?
Yeah.
Okay, then yeah, 100%.
Okay, what's the country?
It would be one of two. It'd either be the Philippines.
Because?
Because of Ima's home. So Ima's home is a home that my dad and my family have built and been a part of for the past, I think, close to a decade now. Yeah, I've been over there a couple times, and every single time I go, it's super hard to leave. We're taking care of over 70 kids, I think, and I haven't been there for the past couple of years, so I'm kind of missing it. So I think being able to spend a year there would be incredible. I just love the Filipino culture. Everybody's so happy. They don't have a ton, but it doesn't matter. The food is the one thing that I would be a little... Because whenever Filipino food is good, oh, it's good. But they also eat some weird stuff. But yeah, either that or England. Like if I could live a year like close to Oxford and check off all of my C.S. Lewis and Tolkien bucket list items, that would be fun.
That would be cool. This is the very last would you rather question. And I think it might be the hardest one for you to answer.
Oh, God.
Okay, would you rather... No video games an entire year.
Oh, God.
Or no coffee for an entire year.
Why did you wrote this specifically for... You didn't find this anywhere. You literally wrote this would you rather... You didn't like...
I know.
That's so mean. I think I would do no coffee.
What?
I think so.
No, yeah. You make my coffee every morning.
I'd still make your coffee. Okay. I'd still make your coffee. But since I don't work at a coffee shop anymore, I only drink like one cup a day. Like,
yeah, it's crazy to me.
Yeah, I'd be fine.
Wow. All right, now let's get back to the topic of today's show. So recently, You wrote a book, and I know because I got to help you publish it, yeah. Which was fun.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your book and what it's about.
First of all, this is super surreal to talk about. Just kind of hitting me that there's a book that I wrote words in, and it's out. but the book's called Growing Pains, and it's a collection of poems from the past, like, 10 years of my life. I never thought that people would see them. They were mostly therapeutic and a way to process some of the hurt and trauma that I experienced in my teenage years. I'm glad I have language for this now, but I think the best way to put it was whenever I was 17 years old, I was groomed and then sexually abused by a trusted leader. And whenever that came to light, there wasn't a lot done about it. So I felt like I was left to my own devices to process and to understand and make sense of what happened, which did not go well for a really long time. It wasn't until, honestly, several years later, whenever I got around healthy people and was able to talk about it, that it actually, like, that I was able to fully comprehend what had happened. But the book itself is the journey from poems that were written in the first couple months of realizing what happened all the way till 7 years later. That's what the book's about. That's kind of my story, kind of my journal.
Mm-hmm. You said that you started out writing these poems in a way that you thought, like, no one would ever be able to see them. Like, they were just for you.
Yeah.
What put the idea into your head to package them into a book?
Yeah. Like, there was one day when we were dating, and you asked me, like, oh, what's one thing that you want to do? And I said, I would love to write a book before I'm 30. And you responded with, like, oh, that's easy. We can do that. And I was like, you're actually insane. Like, it's not that
probably
easy.
Probably a real quote.
100%. Your exact words were, oh, that's easy. Like, yeah, we can do that. No problem. So that was the initial seed, I think. Mm-hmm. The thing that kind of made it seem more like a reality or made it seem more like something that was attainable was Thanksgiving Day.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be 2018?
Yeah.
2018. Yeah. First of all, that was the first Thanksgiving I had never spent with my family, which is kind of sad. But I spent Thanksgiving with you and your family here in Birmingham, and that was before we were engaged. We were still dating at that point. And I had your iPad and was just doodling and stuff and ended up drawing a skull with a flower growing out of a crack in the top of the skull. And spent about 15 to 20 minutes just writing different script around it, trying to figure out what it meant or whatever. And that's when the word Growing Pains kind of stuck out to me. From that thought came the title poem, Growing Pains. After I wrote the title poem, I kind of just flipped through old notebooks and saw that that's my life journey so far, like up until this point. Yeah, Growing Pains just seemed so fitting.
Mm-hmm.
And then whenever I looked at everything that I had written through the lens of that poem, like, it was a very obvious, okay, here are a lot of poems written about pain, too many poems written about pain. And here are some poems that are kind of the light at the end of the tunnel, kind of the redemption arc, the growth. So I think that's where it came from.
I remember that day.
It was a good day. I remember, so we were still dating, and it was fresh, like, we had only been dating for like 2 months, 3 months, I think. I was celebrating a major holiday with you and your family.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember y'all started taking Thanksgiving pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And in the back of my head, I'm like, I shouldn't be in these pictures because if things don't work out, like, if she ends up breaking up with me, because even then I knew, like, if this ends, it's because of, that's her decision, not mine. I was like, I shouldn't be in these pictures because if I am and we break up, I'm going to be the weirdo in the Thanksgiving pictures years down the line. And I remember saying, like, I'm just going to sit out for this one. And your mom was like, no, Ben, get over here. I was like, all right, it's fine.
This is happening. That's funny. Yeah. I love that. So I know that you said whenever you started writing all of these, obviously they were just for you. And then you got the idea through me which is awesome. And through our Thanksgiving, just to package it into a book. But was that the first time you thought, I think I want to write, or this is, was that something that you've always kind of wanted to do, something you've always been drawn to?
Yeah, it's definitely something that I've always felt drawn towards. I think the reality of writing a book kind of hit me in late high school.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, it was more of like a fantasy than like a reality, I guess. So I guess, let me back up. So I was the kid growing up that I couldn't play superheroes with like real superheroes. Like when me and my cousin and my brother and when we were playing like in our own little imaginations, I could never be Superman or Batman or something like that because they already existed as their own people. Like, that was Clark Kent and Bruce Wayne. So I had to, it wasn't good enough for me. I had to create my own type of character. So my entire childhood, like, there was just these base of characters that I had always played with and been around. And then whenever I got into high school, I started writing stories, like, short little one-page stories about some of these characters and giving them depth and just kind of writing about them. But it wasn't until, like, high school whenever I had some of my teachers say, hey, you're actually kind of good at this. I actually had one teacher my senior year of high school who was actually, he was actually called me after class because he was mad at me because, like, I was goofing off with some of the other, some of my classmates. And he just said, you're better than this. Like, you're really good at this. Like, mm-hmm. Don't stoop down to their level. And I, like, at the time I was so offended. And I was so mad. But looking back, like, I'm super thankful for that moment. It always seemed like an impossibility. Like, I didn't even know where to start. Even whenever I had tried to write stuff before and had just, like, given up after a chapter or two. And I was like, okay, well, maybe later in life whenever I get more discipline. Or maybe later in life whenever I have more free time, or maybe later in life whenever I know a little bit more, like, that's when I'll write a book, or that's whenever I'll finish this thing, or that's whenever, yada, yada, yada. Yeah, so it had always been in my heart.
I'm glad for that teacher.
Yeah. I've tried to look for him. Mr. Sample.
If you're listening.
For real though. Like, he was my English teacher in my senior year at Deer Park High School. And I've tried to look him up several times, and he's just not findable.
Yeah.
For some reason, I don't know.
So, what do you think was the hardest part about writing a book? I know it was a long process because I had the privilege of watching it, some of it, the later part of it, not those beginning poems. Yeah. But what was the hardest part for you?
I think two things. One is just looking at the piece of work in its entirety, and then also looking at each individual poem and saying, yes, this is what you were meant to be.
Mm-hmm. Being done.
Yeah. Like, even going through and reading it now, like, there's so many things I'm like, this is far from perfect. Because I'm making it myself. There's no right way, you mm-hmm. know? Like, there's, like, I'm so fixated on doing it the right way. And whenever it's myself that's in charge, I don't know. I just don't. I guess I haven't given myself permission to say that's the right way.
Mm-hmm.
So always looking for, like, the perfect one or the perfect set of words or whatever. Being able to put a stamp of approval and saying, yes, this is good. This is good.
Which is like the creation story.
I know. Which is, yeah.
It's part of the creative process is saying, this is good, and knowing when it's good. And then also, just like God, knowing when it's not done.
Yeah.
And saying, this isn't quite where I want it to be.
Yeah. So there's a lot of poems that I tinkered with a lot. Most of them started off as like one sentence lines that were just thoughts that I ended up expanding. But there's there's a few in there.
Mm-hmm.
That I wrote down, and immediately I knew, like, okay, this is done. Like, mm-hmm. this is perfect. And some of them I could have even messed with years later, but I wrote them. Like, there's a couple poems in there that I remember writing in college in the middle of an English class whenever I was supposed to be paying attention, and I just wrote down a couple lines. They're not, I don't think they're great by any means, but they were who I was in that moment feeling it. And to go back and edit them now almost felt not fair. So that was the other thing I really struggled with. Like, what do I do with these old poems? Like, there's just a couple dark ones. There's one about dreaming of hurting myself. And not because I want to feel pain or anything, but because I just want a reason to do nothing. I wrote that poem in a short stories class where we were talking about Heart of Darkness. And I just was not paying attention and just wrote that down. I have the journal right in there. Like, I've got a little weird drawing that goes with it of me with a smiley face being tossed down a flight of stairs. Like, it's kind of, it's ugly. Whenever I was putting this thing together, I looked at some of these older poems that whenever I read them, they kind of make me squirm a little bit, and thought about, okay, how can I make this sound a little bit nicer? And just felt like this is good because this is who I was. It's not who I am anymore, but these are real feelings and thoughts that I had for a season of my life. And then the other part, the other struggle has been, I mean, like just talking about these poems, and they make me squirmy, and now literally anybody can read them.
Yeah.
Literally anyone can pick up Growing Pains and read some of the things I'm most ashamed of, and having people like comment, and which is great. I've received nothing but affirmation, and people have been moved by it, but the fact that people know how deep the depression went for a while in my life and what had been done to me whenever I didn't talk about it for a really long time is just kind of like, it's like going, to keep up with the metaphor of the book, it's like going from like a coffin, like dark, to all of a sudden it's noon on a beach in Jamaica. It's like, oh, here I am in all my glory.
Yeah. I like that you had that commitment to the authenticity of your words when they were written.
Yeah, well, I'm a 4 on the Enneagram. All about authentic.
But I think that it's needed because from my perspective, if you had prettified those words, they would not have been true to your pain. And then also to the readers out there who may not have experienced that redemption yet, they could think, well, he was in a better place than I am now and handled this much more gracefully than I do now.
Yeah.
So that truth can meet people in genuine pain.
Yeah.
Not prettified pain.
Yeah, I like that. I never thought of it like that.
Yeah, I think it's important not to sugarcoat.
Yeah. Oh, I don't care for sugarcoating.
I know.
I'm not a fan.
So now that we talked a little bit about the difficult parts of writing, what was the best part?
Being done.
Yeah.
Like, that was just, yeah, kind of like I talked about earlier about how writing a book just seemed so insurmountable, and having a copy in my hands, it's like, yeah, these are things that I had written. That's very surreal. Talking about it is very surreal. Just the thought of being done with it. Yeah, kind of. Because also it's hard being done with it. Being done with it was the most rewarding and the best part, but it's also the worst part. Because in a sense, I had been working on this collection for a decade. And when I say working, I feel like I need to clarify. Working on it for a decade doesn't mean like, oh, I'm just in a fever scribbling lines and like, oh, like some madman. I mean, like, working on it for a decade, I mean, like, I'll scribble a poem here and then 3 months later scribble another poem, and like, very slow process. So the best part is being able to look at it and say, yes, this is a season of my life that is done. And then also the reality of seeing something that I thought was impossible in my hand and being able to flip through it is the best thing. But it's also not, because it's 10 years of work, 10 years of dreams that are done. And now there's like kind of like this feeling of loss almost. Like, it's like, oh, like a, like,
it's over.
Yeah, it's over. Like, I can't work on this anymore. Like, I'm done with this. So the thought of, okay, what now? Like, this was what I was just did naturally for 10 years. What do I do now that it's done? So, yeah, even though that's the best thing, it's also kind of like a sore spot.
Yeah, it's sad. Yeah. You're an empty nester. No, I'm just kidding.
But for real, that's what I didn't. We don't have kids, so I can't use the metaphor. But that's what it felt like. It felt like, oh my God, my firstborn is off to college.
Yeah. Here's a lighter metaphor. It's like whenever you're dreaming about going to Disney World, and then you go and you have the time of your life, but then when the trip's over, it's over.
Oh God. God, that's a powerful metaphor.
So talk a little bit about when you released your book, because you touched on it lightly, but I know you felt relieved and joyed that this was done, but talk about the vulnerable side of it, because I know it's one of those things that you literally wrote down the most painful parts of your life, yeah. And now people have them in their homes or in their backpacks with them.
Yeah.
What's that like?
That's weird. It's really weird. I haven't gotten used to it. Yeah, it's a little unsettling every now and then that whenever somebody wants, they can just read the parts of my life that I have hidden for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of it, knowing that anybody can read anything. And the other part of it is people that knew me. I think that's the scarier one. Like, old Joe Schmo over in, California can pick it up, and it's like, they don't know me. They have no context of who I am. To them, it's just another Me Too story.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the people that I'm in, that I know and that I grew up with. Like, what do they think?
Mm-hmm.
Did I say too much? Did I not say enough?
Mm-hmm.
So there's that thorn in the flesh, so to speak, of well, did their perception of me change now too because of the reality that I'm facing or that I lived? It's kind of scary. It's very scary to know that people that you loved for a really long time can read something and it will either make or break the version of you in their heads forever.
Yeah. And I don't know if this is how it is for you, but for me in the past, anytime I have shared my personal testimony in a permanent way, whether that is from a stage that has a recording of it,
mm-hmm.
or in a book,
mm-hmm.
I feel a sense of shame creep over me.
Yeah.
And you do have to, I feel like it's the attack of the enemy, because the Bible says it's by the blood of the Lamb,
mm-hmm.
and the word of our testimony that we overcome.
Yeah.
So it's in those moments when we share that testimony, there is power.
Yeah. Which is true, because I felt like before Growing Pains came out, every time I talked about it, I had a quiver in my voice.
Mm-hmm.
Before the book released, so if anything, it was for me that I put it out there. And if it helps other people, that's incredible. But that wasn't the intention. It was more of okay, here's the things that I've been holding on to for a really long time that I still struggle to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
I can't change it. I can't erase it. I remember one time I talked with a pastor who had a very similar story to mine. So this pastor was teaching a class, and he opened up and said, yeah, this is my story. This is what happened. And it was somewhat similar to my story. And he was just so open the way he talked about it. And then even afterwards gave the class an assignment. I don't know why that was so crazy to me. That's like, you just told everybody what I'm most ashamed of by far, and you gave them an assignment based off of it. Like, that's mm-hmm. nuts. I asked him to meet, and I told him hey, and I remember even then, this was the first time I had talked about it to somebody in authority outside of the group that I was in whenever mm-hmm. it happened. And I cried, and I could barely get the words out, and I mumbled all over the place. And my question was, I want to talk about this. How are you talking about this? And what he told me actually turned into one of the poems in the book, where he said, well, right now you're just telling the story for you, which is okay. You need to tell the story for you. You need to tell the story for yourself to get comfortable with it. And then he said, but what I said today in front of that class, I could say in front of a crowd of 1,000 people and it wouldn't affect me. And I remember thinking, I want to get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I, right now I'm struggling to just say it out loud to myself, or struggling to say it to one person. I want to get to the point where I can stand in front of 1,000 people and be like, yeah, this is what happened to me, and it's fine. Like, mm-hmm. God's good. Yeah. I can't make sense of everything, but I know God, this is what God has done for me through it. This is how God has seen me through it.
I'm really glad that that pastor was able to share that in a way that encouraged you to get to this point.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, it's been the first year of our marriage that you've really started putting these poems together. Mm-hmm. So we got married July 12th, and you had been working on all of this, and then 1 year later, July 12th, we got to release Growing Pains. And I think just through that journey of being able to first tell that story for you and then now to other people, I've seen you grow in a year.
Yeah.
And so I think it's one of those things that, yes, it was painful, and I hate that, and it was emotional, but it's amazing the deep work that God can do in those deeply broken places.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't wish that on anyone, but in those deep, deep cracks and those deep, deep crevices and hurts and wounds, I've seen so much growth out of those deep wounds.
Yeah. In a sense, that is a little bit the story of Growing Pains was self-medicating. Like, I could tell that there was a broken part, and I self-medicated with relationships. I self-medicated with alcohol. I self-medicated with drugs. I self-medicated with self-righteousness. I self-medicated with a false sense of superiority. I self-medicated with all of these different things, and just kind of trying to put a layer of concrete over the crack, mm-hmm. and just letting it, like, no, I got this, like, never talking about it, never doing the deep work of excavating it or cleaning the wound, just piling filth, hoping that it'll fit. And it wasn't until several years later, like too long later. Like, I wish my story was I knew exactly what to do when it happened, and I lived a holy and righteous life immediately after. But that's not my story. My story is that it took me close to like 6 or 7 years to figure out, oh, these things that I'm doing, they are self-medicating. I'm actually neglecting this part of me that's broken, and I'm self-medicating it through holy and unholy ways. Like, I'm pursuing relationships that are not right, and I'm drinking or smoking or doing all these things that they're not good. They're not good for me, but hopefully that they fix a little bit. And then the holy side, where it's, well, let me just throw myself into this ministry, or let me just throw myself into this. Maybe if I do good things, maybe if I do the right things, maybe if I can fix this one person, like maybe that's whenever I'll be good enough, or maybe that's whenever I'll be set free, or maybe that's whenever I'll be saved. And mm-hmm.
That's a huge gap from where you were to where you are now. What do you think was that shift in your heart from I gotta do, or like I gotta medicate, to let me receive?
That's a good question. God. Honestly, what changed my life is coming to Highlands College.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason I came to Highlands College was because one of my close friends had come to Highlands College. And before he came to Highlands College, he was a little bit of a knucklehead. Like, mm-hmm. he didn't make the best decisions. He was very emotionally led. And then I remember the first year that he had come back from Highlands College, he was just this different person. Like, he had so much wisdom, and he had favor, and he would talk about his decision process, and I probably wouldn't use this language then, but I would use it now, spirit-led. Like, it was just like, oh my God, like, who are you? You're a different person. And that's what led me to come to Highlands College. It wasn't because necessarily I felt called to ministry. It wasn't because I saw a piece of promo or anything like that. It was, his life is different. he is better, and I want that for me. So I came here and just throughout Highlands College gave my everything to the programming, and honestly, I never thought about it like this before. I think my time in Highlands College was the first time I had lived my life not for myself.
Yeah.
Like, I was actually doing things for other people. So I don't even know if I would call it self-medicating anymore.
Servant.
Yeah, I was just doing what I knew to be right. Like, mm-hmm. I knew that this was good.
Yeah.
And there was a time before Highlands College where I would do the right things with the wrong motives. Like, I would do the right things because maybe it'll fix me, or maybe I'll feel better, or maybe this will blot out some sin that I did.
Mm-hmm.
Very religious. But whenever I got here, I just didn't really think about any of it. And it was one of those things where the more I did it, the more revelation about the pain that I was experiencing I would have. It's like I didn't realize how deep the wound actually was until I stopped thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then whenever I stopped thinking about it, I started seeing, like, okay, I'm not just mad at that person, but I'm mad at that leader as well. Okay, I'm not just mad at that leader, I'm mad at that friend as well. Oh, I'm not just mad at that friend. Ultimately, it led to the point where I was, God, I'm mad at you. Like, mm-hmm. I'm a little pissed off that you let this happen.
Yeah.
I'm a little angry that that person is still in ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And it just went deep to the point where I didn't trust God. I didn't believe that he had my best interests at heart. I didn't believe in the church. I didn't believe in anything. And I didn't realize I didn't believe it until I was doing something that took my mind off of the self, like the self-loathing and the to go, I know I jokingly said earlier that I'm a 4 on the Enneagram, but like the shame and the realizing that, oh my God, I am broken.
Yeah.
Or, oh my God, I am flawed. Or this is my fault. I did something. Whenever I actually took my mind off of that and focused on something outside of myself was whenever I realized, oh, I just felt like God was just kind of slowly, like, layering back the deep hurts to the point where he got to what ultimately was this not believing that he was good and not mm-hmm. believing that he was for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then whenever I felt like that was healed, like, everything else just kind of stacked up on top of it, where it was just like...
You restored your foundation. You had a place to lay everything.
Yeah.
And from hearing you talk, the picture that comes to my mind is whenever you're looking at something super, super close, you have no context.
Mm-hmm.
But each time you take a step back, your perspective widens.
Yeah.
And you can see the whole picture.
Yeah.
Is whenever you're so focused on the wound,
mm-hmm.
you don't see what's inflicting it.
Yeah.
And so I think just from hearing you speak, it's encouraging to know that when we stop focusing on what's wrong with us and we start focusing on Jesus and serving him and serving yeah. his purpose, he can clear up all of that the misconceptions that we have
yeah.
about why we are the way we are and why yeah. things happen to us and just that why me.
Yeah.
When we stop saying why me and we just look at God,
yeah.
it's like he can restore yeah. with a holy perspective.
Yeah.
It's not about you. So on that note, what would you say have been some of your greatest sources of inspiration, whether it be just simply like a skills level, oh, they're a really great writer, or yeah. maybe even an inspirational level of they're really good at taking pain yeah. and making it beautiful. Who inspires you?
Yeah. I think first would be my parents. Yeah, my mom and dad. They've gone through a lot of heartache and a lot of pain. And I remember younger watching it happen and not understanding it, but the older I get, the more I realize, like, wow, like you were dealt a poor hand in a lot of areas, and you've somehow made the best of everything that you've touched, and you've managed to build a home for kids that had no future, had no hope. Been able to build a thriving church. Like, there's so many things that they've done with their lives that have been incredible. And then as far as just creatively or writing wise, two of my favorite people of all time, and I know that this is a little generic, but C.S. Lewis and Tolkien, I think that they were both brilliant. And I love that they were able to be exactly who they were meant to be and almost carve out their own section in Christianity. Like, they got to carve their own path. I love that.
I love them too, so I'm not at all disappointed by your somewhat basic answer. Disagree completely. There's a reason so many people love them.
Yeah.
They were incredible.
Yeah.
And then one last question.
All right.
So I know that there are so many people listening to this right now, and they are encouraged by your story of sharing your testimony, and then also by your accomplishment of publishing a book. So if you could give our listeners one piece of advice to those people who are saying, wow, I wish I can do that, what would you say to these listeners?
First thing that pops in my head is an impossibility for them. I would say, marry Megan Kilgore. Because for whatever reason, she makes dreams realities.
My gosh, you're going to make me cry.
But, okay, I'll stop. But seeing as that is never going to happen, I would say find the right people to trust. So I spent a lot of time trusting people that I probably shouldn't have, and spent a lot of time telling my story to people that they didn't take care of it well.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be my biggest piece of encouragement on either helping on both sides, on helping process trauma and emotions and pain and all that stuff. Like, find a group of people, or even if it's just one person, find one person that you trust that is filled with the Holy Spirit, because you can trust them and they are not filled with the Holy Spirit, and they will only tell you opinions and they'll tell you what they think. And in those moments, you don't need opinions and what people think. You need what God thinks, and you need the Word of God in your life. So to process pain and trauma and emotions, find that person. And then on the creative end, like I joked about C.S. Lewis and Tolkien and how it's basic, but Tolkien wouldn't exist without C.S. Lewis, and C.S. Lewis wouldn't exist without Tolkien. They were a part of a group of people that encouraged each other to write and to explore, and it wasn't until Tolkien got around Lewis that he started opening up about the languages that he had created in his childhood, and opened up about Middle Earth, and opened up about this whole realm that he had created in Lewis's encouragement. Even Tolkien later in his life attributed a lot of his inspiration at first was because Lewis cheered him on.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other part of that is Lewis probably never would have came to Christianity if it weren't for Tolkien and Tolkien's slow process with him. Like, it wasn't like a rushed thing of like, well, you better believe right now. It was walks around Oxford where they talked about theology and apologetics and where did we come from and all this stuff that led Lewis ultimately to making the decision to follow Christ. And it wasn't until Lewis heard Tolkien's story of Middle Earth that he thought, oh, I have an inspiration for a lion named Aslan.
Mm-hmm.
And writes this incredible children's series called Chronicles of Narnia that is just so beautiful. They did it together. Mm-hmm. Creatively. And there's a group of people that did that. It wasn't just them two on an island. There was a whole group of them that met together. So in either category, you need people.
Yeah.
Whether you want to admit it or not, you need people.
That's really good advice and really encouraging.
Yeah.
And I love you.
I love you too.
Well, guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode. I had so much fun during this conversation, and I hope you did as well. Also, as an added bonus, if you have ever wanted to write your own book or have ever been interested in self-publishing a book, I want you to listen up. I am giving away my self-publishing Kickstart guide 100% free. All you have to do is go to the show notes of this episode, and I'll link it there. Simple as that. Honestly, my hope is just that this guide would help to serve as the little extra nudge or push that you might need to get started on your publishing journey. I know for my husband, publishing his book has been life-changing and so healing, and I just believe so many of you have stories that need to be shared. So if you're interested, it's 100% free, linked in the show notes just for you. Again, thank you so much for joining us today, and I'll see you again next Thursday.